It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but Christians are always acting like they're better than anyone else. Well, that is unfortunate. I don't think most Christians intend to act like they're better than anyone else. Neither do they really think that. I do believe that many of them come across that way. So let me set the record straight. As Christians, we are not better than anyone else. My acceptance of Jesus Christ does not make me a better person or a more special person than you. It simply means that I have taken advantage of an offer from God, the same offer he extends you, the same offer he extends everyone. Some people accept this offer. Some people don't. God is a gentleman. He allows them to accept it or reject it. But one thing is certain. This offer was certainly accepted many years ago by my co-host. Say hello to Sharon Cushard.
Hi, Bob. Great to be here. I'm really enjoying your conversation with Zach.
It's been a lot of fun. We had him on a couple of weeks ago, and it went so well. I said, come on next week, and then we never seemed to finish. But that's probably because Zach always has a lot to say.
Well, I loved his opening question, can skeptics believe in God?
Yes.
And as a skeptic, when I was investigating the faith many years ago when I was about 28, I believed in the probability that God existed. And so that was my mindset as I was having discussions with pastors and their wives, a pastor in particular.
You were open, but you leaned more toward God existing.
Yeah, well,
But lean toward him not existing, and both people would be open.
Well, I have two ideas on this. I know what I felt like at that time as a skeptic. I was definitely open. If you could show me good evidence for me to, get on this path, if you could show me those breadcrumbs and bring me to the point where I'm willing to, take a leap of faith, it's the way I would put it, I would do that,
Okay.
And that's kind of what my mindset was.
Right.
Then I had another thought about Zach's question, can skeptics believe in God? Or phrased another way, can someone who believes in God have doubts? And I think it's a little bit further down the line, that kind of a question.
They would say they believe, now do you mean somebody believing in God in a general agnostic way or someone who's already a born-again Christian?
Right,
still
somebody,
have
yes, exactly.
Right.
Somebody who actually has accepted Christ.
Right.
But at a later point in time on their journey, they begin to have serious doubts.
Yeah, and I think there are many people that would call themselves Christians who have serious doubts. It depends on how much we're cultivating that personal relationship with God. I think there are churches that teach people to cultivate that and churches that don't. If a person has just never really encountered God, but they found some evidence persuasive, sure, they could continue to doubt it. Would you think, though, that if somebody had really encountered God genuinely, then, I don't know, for myself, I have all kinds of doubts about whether I'm living up to it.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
There are all kinds of times I'm going, boy, I screwed up. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not making God. I doubt my role. I'm not doubting whether I've really encountered God because I've really encountered him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there is one caveat to that, though.
That word, by the way, let me tell everybody, Sharon loves the word caveat, and I must say,
it's the first time I said it in a long time.
In a long time, but I must say that since getting to know Sharon, a very special appreciation on my part is developing toward the word caveat as well. Please, pray tell. Go ahead and continue,
Sharon. Wait, I want to tell you one word I like better, though.
Oh, you like
conundrum.
A word?
Conundrum. Much better than caveat.
I like both words. If I had to choose, I think I like caveat a little bit better. Not to be confused with cavity. This is caveat. I wonder if there's syntaxes of the same word. Well, lest we bore the audience to death, go ahead and continue with your main point.
Yeah,
Sharon.
My main caveat point would be I could see being a sincere believer, having experienced a touch from God in some way, some significant way, meeting Jesus, and then at a later point in time thinking, was that real or was that in my mind? So
oh,
I
sure.
could see that. too.
Sure, you bet, because the experiences with God can come and go. For example, if somebody has a pen pal over the internet, and it's been a long time since they've heard from this person, then or a couple of lovers broke up and one went to Europe for a year, there's times when you stop and go, boy, are they even alive anymore?
Right,
do they still think about me? I could understand that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I still think either people have encountered God or not, even if they need to be reminded. I've talked to some people that said, yeah, I wonder sometimes whether God exists. And I'll tell, so, well, what caused you to become a Christian? Now, sometimes it's like, well, the pastor gave a good sermon and I went forward and shook his hands and prayed with him. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to downplay that, but that's not the same as saying you've met God. Other times people had incredible encounters with the Holy Spirit, but they've just forgotten about them. Look at the things Jesus' disciples forgot. He was always telling him that he was going to go into Jerusalem and rise from the dead. And when he died, they were shocked. They were flabbergasted. And when he rose from the dead, they were more shocked and more flabbergasted. Well, welcome those of you that just tuned in to the Bob Siegel Show. Our call-in number, if you have ideas, if you are skeptical, or if you're a Christian and you have questions of your own, because Christians continue to have good questions, our call-in number 1-800-556-1210, 1-800-556-1210, or you can email me questions@bobsiegel.net, questions@bobsiegel.net. If you are one of our newer listeners on KPRZ, you may not be aware that the Bob Siegel Show also broadcasts from our sister station, KCBQ, 1 hour before, Sundays from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. And on KCBQ, the last few weeks, I've been dialoguing with an undergrad named Zach. I know a lot of you listen to us for both hours, so to some of you, Zach's an old friend by now. But to our KPRZ listeners, to some of you, you may not have heard Zach before. I believe you're going to find him an open-minded atheist. We met recently at Central Washington University, and what I would like to do right now is continue the conversation we began on KCBQ. Zach, welcome to our second hour.
Hey, Bob, thanks.
Now, you were about to, let's see, we should probably give just a small recap.
Okay.
I had told people that I was a big fan of Harry Houdini, who showed how everything, even a lot of the things in the occult, are tricks, and yet he himself was open to the occult. Then I mentioned that I had an experience with the occult, which as a Christian I completely denounce. I believe that it came from Satan. I would not have believed that at the time. But one thing that was undeniable, it was genuinely supernatural. And I mentioned that I talked to a spirit that claimed to be my sister. I believe now it was a spirit impersonating my sister, a demon hoping that I'd get obsessed with this and become demonically possessed. But in evaluating just the supernatural nature of the experience itself, you were telling us in our last hour that you had a theory that could maybe account for this apart from it being supernatural. So go ahead and tell us what that theory is.
All right. Well, the way I justify this is, how old were you at the time when it happened?
Oh, I was, let's see, I was 17, just about to turn 18.
Okay.
It was probably around, November of that year. My birthday's in December.
Okay, so you're 17 years old. You were at a party with your friends that also believed it.
No. Some of them did. We heard that a few nuts upstairs were using a Ouija board. I went up with my buddies to laugh at these morons, these idiots, these nincompoops. So you need to know, I really didn't even enter into this with any open mind. I appreciate an open mind. Zach, you are more open-minded right now while I'm talking to you than I was when I went up there with my friends.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's well, how. Zach, if you could, I wish we'd had a camera. As I was looking around at all my friends as we were watching things, I was seeing people's jaws just drop, and they had this look on their face, like how is this being done?
And I understand that it's a very convincing. What Ouija boards? Looking at it scientifically, it's what's called ideomotor response, and that's a motion that occurs without you being consciously aware that it happens. Whenever you have more than one person, for example, there's a game that a lot of at least in the RA staff, we have to play this game that everybody hates, and everybody puts their finger out, and you put a hula hoop on your fingers, and everybody has to be touching this hula hoop. You cannot let contact break from your finger in the hula hoop, and the goal of the game is to let it to have the hula hoop get lowered to the ground, but you cannot break contact. Now, everybody is kind of pushing up slightly, and the hula hoop always rises up, and it's almost impossible to have it lower, and that's the same principle. Now, if I was to do that with a group of people and say, hey, let's see if the spirits will raise this up. And, oh, my gosh, I'm not moving it. Well, you're not moving it. Everybody's getting mad, even in the staff thing, that I'm not moving it. Yeah, everybody's yelling at each other. It always floats up, and it's the same response. Now, okay, you're saying how a lot of things you couldn't have explained and stuff of that sort.
Yeah.
I would say, how many things did it say that it was inaccurate about?
Well, that's a good question. Let's put a hold on whether it was even inaccurate. Let me give you a sequence one at a time about what amazed me, and I'll give you a chance to respond to them one at a time. In fact, I'll go you one better. I'll give you a chance to respond to them one at a time when we come back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. My special guest, a very open-minded skeptic named Zach Kroeger from Central Washington University. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, 1-800-556-1210.
KPRZ, San Diego. And worldwide at KPRZ.com.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having a website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
See the Chronicles of Narnia before anyone else. KPRZ will be at the Walmart off of the 805 and Claremont Mesa Boulevard on Monday, December 5th from 12 to 3 p.m. The first 70 people to bring an unwrapped toy to help Toys for Joy will be given a ticket to see Chronicles of Narnia December 8th at the Mission Valley AMC. So look for the KPRZ van on Monday, December 5th from 12 to 3 p.m. at the Kearney Mesa Walmart. Bring a toy, help a needy child, and get a ticket to see the Chronicles of Narnia. Visit KPRZ.com for more information.
KPRZ.
KPRZ.
San Diego.
Why do I go to crosswalk.com? The best Bible study tools on the internet, and they're free.
The biggest Christian chats and forums on the web.
I love the daily devotionals.
Movie reviews I can trust.
Great articles on marriage and parenting.
The latest news and reviews on Christian books and music.
A great Christian single section.
News and commentary from a Christian perspective.
Why do I go to crosswalk.com?
Why do I go to crosswalk.com?
Why do I go to crosswalk.com?
Crosswalk.com, the intersection of faith and life. Why do you go?
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Rodan. Dr. Kathy Fields and I created Proactive Solution because acne is the number one problem we see in our practices. As dermatologists, we treat acne as a physical condition. But what really affected us was seeing the emotional toll acne takes. So maybe you're the one with the breakouts. You shy away from social situations. You avoid being photographed, or you won't leave the house without makeup. So what's preventing you from trying Proactive? My guess is that you're afraid. You're afraid that it just won't work. Afraid to get your hopes up, only to be disappointed. This time you don't have to worry. We are so confident that Proactive will work for you that I'm offering you a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Solution.
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Solution, just call 1-800-420-8701 and you'll become a believer. Call 1-800-420-8701. Call 1-800-420-8701.
KPRZ, 1210 AM, San Diego's Family Station.
The Bob Siegel Show. Our call-in number, 1-800-556-1210, and Zach from Central Washington University. Welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, let me go do this one at a time.
Okay.
For those of you who just joined us, I believe that the occult, tarot cards, seances, Ouija boards, I think half the time those things are phony baloney and they're not real. Other times I believe they're supernatural, but with a deceptive supernatural source, Satan. I'm talking about a time I was involved in this stuff, not to endorse it. God delivered me from it. But what it did do is it convinced me that the supernatural was real, even though it was a supernatural power that I should not have been dabbling with. And what had happened initially is some friends and I were watching some people with a Ouija board. Now, let me clarify, Zach. The Ouija board was doing nothing that defied the laws of physics.
Okay. Exactly, so, or even normal human psychology.
No, right. So that, and of course, in a Ouija board, people have their eyes closed and they have their fingers on this little window with a pivot on it, and they, and the first thing you're thinking
they
is,
did
well,
have their eyes closed though.
They did have their eyes. Oh, they had their eyes closed, and could one of them have been peeking without me noticing it? Let me be as open as I can. I suppose that was possible. Mm-hmm. If they did, they did a pretty good job of not making it look that way. What intrigued me, and I know they were at least doing something I couldn't have done, the letters were so close together. They were moving their hands so fast. And I'm not saying that the fastness of their hands was violating the laws of physics, but I am saying that they were moving it so fast, even if my eyes had been open, I could not have put it over the correct letters and spelled out the words so fast without it accidentally falling on the wrong letter. But what happened is we had a spirit named Michael who first spoke to us. And then, like I said, we were there just a short time. And then we got kicked out. I guess the parents of the girl that was hosting the party didn't like her dealing with the Ouija board. We went to a place called Palmar Park. This was San Jose, California. And under the moonlight, we continued. And we met this spirit that called itself Jane. Now, a little bit of background. My father had disowned Jane. She had gotten into a lot of trouble, had been in juvenile hall for a while. She came back home. He quit talking to her. Well, people in their naivety who had some religious understanding but really didn't read the Bible would ask questions about God and about guardian angels, and none of them really knew what they were talking about. Well, I was kind of intrigued. The first thing I noticed was that this spirit on the Ouija board cussed like a sailor. And you have no idea how much that reminded me of my sister Jane. I can't even say it on this radio station, but she'd be saying things like, "Bob, shut the blank blankety blank up." I'm going, "Boy, this is Jane." Anyway, but then I asked a question. I said, "Well, Jane, are you a guardian angel of our family?" She said, "Only mother's side of the family." Now, my brother and I were both there. We were not working the Ouija board. Then we reconvened. A couple nights later, we had a seance. There was this woman that got possessed. Now, for the sake of openness, let me say she was acting, claiming she was possessed. She turned to my brother with tears in her eyes, and she said, "Paul, be good. Paul, be good." This was something my sister always said to my brother because his personality was a little more like hers than mine was. I was the middle child. Well, I was my father's firstborn. He had married my mother. My mother had been married before, so Jane was my mother's firstborn. I was my mother's secondborn. I was kind of the middle child and the firstborn of my dad at the same time. Firstborn children, as a general rule, tend to be a little more submissive to authority. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Jane was always worried that Paul would follow in her footsteps and get in trouble. Now, as it happened, I was the one that followed in her footsteps, only in the sense that I became a Christian, and I got kicked out of the house for that. So as the years went forward, I had trouble with my dad, too. But it wasn't because I was getting into trouble with the law. It was just because I was getting into religious territory that, being a Jew, they didn't want me to go. But when she turned to Paul and said, "Paul, be good, Paul, be good," boy, that's, I don't know how anybody else could have come up with that. There was also a prediction at the seance that somebody would die, and this woman that was possessed did get into a car accident. I'm not necessarily saying, you know, coincidences happen. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of throwing that out there, but the thing that was the most persuasive to me was this, Paul be good, from the seance, and only mother's side of the family on the Ouija board. The quickness with which the Ouija board was looking at the letters, that was causing our eyelids to raise and our jaws to drop. I wouldn't say we were exactly convinced at that point, but boy, we were sure a little bit intrigued. Go ahead. I'll go ahead and respond to any of this. And I'm not saying you have to respond to this particular incident either, because obviously you weren't there. But
I'll go a little bit overview of how I kind of see it, how I would rationalize it, and then it's kind of the thing that kind of seals it for me. With the atmosphere that you were in, the time, it was, how long ago it was, how people are pattern-seeking animals, they find hits, ignore the misses of things in the sense with psychics or tarot cards or whatever the case. Also, how our memory works, we don't remember, you're not remembering the actual event. Now, I'm not trying to make that sound bad. When I think back to my childhood, I'm not remembering those actual events either. I'm remembering the last time that I thought about them. Every time you think back to a past event, your memory, that is now what the memory is. So every time you think of something that happened in the past, you're creating a new version of it. So as we know, things happen to change, and it would change. Now, also, there's a common thing I have happen with my family, with my brother, and sometimes we'll be talking about a story of something from our childhood, and he's like, oh, we remember this? And I remember talking about it with him before, and I have a memory that it happened, but I'm not sure if I actually remember it happening or if I just remember him telling me about it and then kind of making that memory in my mind, kind of filling that in. And there have been numerous studies to show that this happens all the time, and it's very deceiving. Now, so if you know, you guys leave and everything, and you're like, really, that was something kind of creepy. And maybe later somebody's like, oh, you remember how it was moving around so quick? Oh, yeah, I think, and maybe you remember somebody kind of moved their hand quickly. Not saying that this is what happened, but just how I'm rationalizing it. How it could possibly, this kind of this willingness to believe that it happened, you're convinced, other people saying things, planting memories, thinking back to it years afterwards, remembering the hits, ignoring the misses. The final thing, though, that makes me, like, a little skeptical is James Randi. It always comes back to James Randi and his million-dollar challenge. And there have been numerous attempts with Ouija boards. And so I have to, and nobody's ever done it under controlled conditions. Usually a little test they'll do is blindfold the person or just turn the board around when they're not, and have them blindfolded. And it never works.
Okay. You're making some good points, and I will respond, hopefully, with some good points of my own, but we'll find out. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with my special guest, Zach Kroeger, Central Washington University.
Thanks for spending your day with KPRZ, 1210 AM, San Diego's Positive Talk Radio.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Join the Rock Missions Ministry and Beautiful Feet International for a missions fair, guest speaker, and container loading. Bring extra children's clothes, donations to purchase Bibles, strong muscles, and moving boxes, which we will send out in time for their annual pastors' conference in the nation of Guinea in West Africa. There will be ample opportunity to network with missionaries and to connect with mission organizations. If you have any inclination towards missions, please come. Join us at The Rock Church at 3554 Ruffin Road. For directions, go online at www.therocksandiego.org.
This is KPRZ, 1210 AM.
We now return to The Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm joined by my friend Zach Kroeger from Central Washington University, and he was explaining to me how a supernatural experience remembered a certain way may possibly be remembered incorrectly. Go ahead and finish your point, Zach,
okay,
and I'll
respond.
Okay,
not just supernatural experiences, but any sort
any
of
experience.
Anything of that. Also, just the final kind of point, the thing that makes me just kind of have to really doubt stuff like this is maybe it does actually work. That'd be cool. But why is it that under controlled situations, when the skeptics are testing it, why does it fail every single time? I have to say there's probably something, just self-deception going on rather than actual supernatural.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and respond to that.
Now, you're making some interesting comments about memory. Let's put that on hold. I'm a big believer in compartmentalizing things for the sake of a... if I were remembering this correctly, what would be your response to this event? And I know, Zach, you weren't there, and so I'm not even asking you to make any evaluation about whether I'm a trustworthy person. So let's up at one. If you were there with me,
okay.
If these things had said something about your family, maybe not exactly that, but something nobody else could have known, it would be very difficult not to at least consider the possibility that this was something genuinely supernatural, even if an hour ago you were laughing about it with your friends, wouldn't it?
It would be, indeed. I'm also a magician, and I've seen a lot of what's called mentalism tricks, and it's allegedly supernatural. It looks really, really magical, but it's not. And it's just, you know, all of a sudden people are thinking of this. I'll write down an address, and then you write down an address, and we wrote down the same address. Oh my gosh, it must be magic. No, there's just a trick to it, and it's very clever. And so I would be skeptical also. I'd be like, whoever's doing this is really good. But I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that there was anything, because there's so many other factors I think that could play in. And then, or if I really was convinced, I'd be like, all right, let's call up James Randi and get $1 million. Let's go do that.
Okay.
Come up and we'll show him.
Right, right. Well, I'd be happy to receive $1 million from James Randi if he wanted to give it to me. But on this particular event, we'd have to travel back through time because he's not going to take my word for it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a big believer in magic tricks also. I love card tricks. Like I said, I love Houdini. And what's that famous act that they have now in Vegas? The guys, you would probably know who
Penn
they are.
Penn and Teller.
Okay. That's exactly what it's about. I watched one of their shows, and they were amazing. And then in their second act, they showed us how they did everything. So I entirely appreciate that, Zach, and that's fascinating. And I'd like to see one of your magic tricks sometime.
All right.
My friends, my bumpkin friends that were using the Ouija board were not that clever.
Yeah,
they just weren't, and I can assure you they knew nothing about my sister. I hadn't said jack to them about it. So at that point, if you know that the people doing it are not that clever, I know I'm painting a very specific hypothetical scenario for you, which... to me, of course, was not hypothetical, but it is to you. But still, there's a point to it. So you know that the people doing it are not that clever. You've seen things happening that you can't explain any other way. And your mind is open.
Yes. I would have to – one thing that comes into play, it's the best, as far as I know, the best self-deception mechanism that is available to humans is that we're pattern-seeking. We remember the hits and we ignore the misses. And this is how if you talk to people that do believe in psychics, I have a friend who told me that a psychic told her that her mom was pregnant and they didn't know she was pregnant yet. And oh, what do you know, 2 weeks later, turns out she was. And I have to ask, how many things did she say, though, that didn't come true? Or how many things did the psychic say that weren't true? Same with the Ouija board. And the response is, well, I don't remember. Exactly. It's about 20% accuracy, generally, with psychics. I'm not sure what Ouija boards.
The only questions I asked that could be verified were things about my family, because I wasn't that interested in anything else. Now, as I recall, some of my friends were asking other questions, and sure, I don't remember what they asked.
Yeah.
From my point of view, the moment a spirit identified itself as my sister, I was only asking things about my sister, and everything that was said was exactly true of our family.
And everything you remember that it said, right?
Okay, let's talk about the memory then.
Okay. Memory is fascinating.
You happen to be talking to somebody, and I don't mean this boastfully at all. I have a very good memory.
It's true.
Take it from my lovely co-host, Sharon. There are times when I'll say, Sharon, well, you could tell him, Sharon, that there are times when
he remembers things exactly the way they happen. He blows me away, so... I just want
to verify that.
She's probably being a little overly generous. Obviously, I don't think anybody can remember anything just 100% exactly. But I have a very good memory, and I remember that night vividly. In fact, I used to go to these wild drama cast parties. It's kind of funny. This is my old wild pagan days. But I was the only one that wasn't getting drunk at these parties, and there was nothing moral about it at all. I had no problem with it. I believe now that it's wrong to get drunk. Even now, I don't believe it's wrong to drink in moderation. But I just never cared for the taste of alcohol.
I agree.
And all my, I just never cared for it. And I'd go, but I would act as nutty as everybody else. I'm that guy that could have been up on the table with the lampshade on his head doing dumb things. And the next day, people would be, oh, Bob was really drunk. I'd say, no, I wasn't. And my friends would ask me, well, why didn't you drink? And I'd say, hey, buddy, the only difference between you and me is you and I go to the same party, and we both have a great time, and I can remember the next day how much fun I had. And you're like, what was that? What did we do? Was there a choice of vegetables? What did we do? So anyway, I know this happened. And actually, Zach, I believe that you're a person that has a pretty good memory. When I first had you on my show, you spoke very vividly about your childhood growing up and some of the things that caused doubt. If hypothetically, if somebody had said, well, Zach, maybe doubts weren't really being placed in your mind. Maybe God was showing you all kinds of convincing things, and you were only remembering the doubt. If somebody were to say that to you, what would your response be?
I'd have to say that's definitely a possibility. My brother and I are actually talking about a similar thing the other day, saying that some of the stuff that I remember, that we both remember from our childhood, we probably don't actually remember. It's probably just from seeing pictures or my parents telling us stories, and the same with some of my friends and whatnot, that some of the stuff I remember probably didn't happen at all, or I didn't even, or my memory of it is totally
wrong. Well, it would depend on the age, and I have done counseling with people regarding memories from their past, but let me put it this way. Is there anything from your childhood that you're absolutely sure you remember?
Gosh, depends how far we go back.
Okay, let's make this as simple as we can. At what age would you say you're remembering things accurately?
Oh, man. That's really, like, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to talk around the question or anything.
No, Zach, I take you at your word.
From my understanding of how memory works, I can't say that I do remember anything exactly as it was, even anything yesterday, just because of how environmental the environment is around and my behavior, my attitude towards it affects everything.
Zach,
so drastically.
I've got good news for you. And as a magician, you're going to be amazed because you're going to see some of your skepticism disappear right before your very eyes. On Friday, I said to you, and I said this the last 2 weeks, I said, now, Zach, unlike some of our other guests, you seem to have a pretty good memory. So you don't need a confirmation call Sunday morning.
Yeah.
You're going to just be there when my screener calls you at 3:30. And you said, oh, yeah. Oh, I won't forget.
Indeed.
So we both know that there are at least some things that you know. Whatever you may believe about memories, Zach, there are some things you just know for a fact that you just really, truly remember.
Indeed.
How about when you take a test? You go, boy, you know I studied this last night, but who knows if I'm remembering this. And you understand, I'm not asking this facetiously. I know you're very sincere when you say there that you have some doubts, but it sounds like you're attracted to an idea about memory. But I'm wondering if it really fleshes out completely, because it seems like, on the other hand, there are some things that you are just sure you do remember.
That's true. Like that's a good example with the phone thing. That's kind of funny. I would say yes, I do. I'm very sure that happened. However, as for what the temperature was out, what I was wearing, where I was exactly standing, the time of day, all the details surrounding it, was I happy? Was I upset? Was I late for something? That's where it gets kind of fuzzy. Now,
okay,
small details.
Okay, I'm with you on that. I don't remember what I had for lunch. Well, when I have a horrible lunch, when someone invites me to their house and they serve lima beans or string beans or these other ghastly things that my lovely co-host loves to eat, and I think the stuff was created after our fall from grace, then I might remember it.
You.
Well, getting back to what you were saying about extraordinary claims and extraordinary evidence, and we may have a disagreement as to what would be the kind of evidence we would look for, but it does sound like something extraordinary would stand out in your mind. So, for example, on a day that you heard something very interesting in one of your classrooms, you're probably going to remember what you heard in that classroom. You told me a couple of weeks ago that sometimes you stay awake at night thinking about these things. But yeah, you might forget the next day what shirt you were wearing. Doesn't it kind of depend on what was fascinating us and what wasn't? Let's continue this over the break.
Okay.
You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show.
KPRZ, San Diego. And worldwide at KPRZ.com.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
Hi, I'm Dr. Karen Avazian. Life is more complicated for our children today than ever before. Family problems, school pressures, and interpersonal conflicts can cause anxiety and depression in our children and keep them from thriving. Your child may be struggling academically due to emotional issues, learning difficulties, or attention deficit disorder. Single parenting and blended families add to the complexities we face today. One thing is certain, no parent wants to see their child suffer. Yet we often do not have the skills to resolve these dilemmas on our own. At Family Counseling Center, we integrate the best that counseling has to offer, based upon God's design for our lives. This counseling experience can help your family resolve current issues and be better prepared for the future. You don't have to struggle alone any longer. Call Family Counseling Center today at 619-529-6608. That's 619-529-6608.
It's radio the whole family can listen to. 1210 AM, KPRZ.
Hey, Bill, hold up.
Hey, Bradley, what's up?
Hey, Mary told me that you and Tracy bought cemetery property, and I thought it seemed a little strange. Is everything okay?
Oh, yeah. Tracy had just been bugging me about it ever since her good friend passed away last fall. She just wanted us to get our ducks in a row, just in case anything like that ever happens to us.
Oh?
Yeah, and I gotta tell you, it was nothing like I thought. This Singing Hills Memorial Park is beautiful. There's trees everywhere, a lake with a waterfall, great bronze sculptures, just a real quality place, and very affordable, too.
Wow.
Look, hopefully we won't need it for a long time, but leaving it up to our kids, that just wasn't an option. And now it's all taken care of. They even gave us a free gift card for gas.
Well, thanks, Bill. I think Mary wants us to look into it. And if they're giving away free gas, well, hey.
To set up your visit to Singing Hills Memorial Park, call 444-3000. That's 619-444-3000.
Singing Hills Memorial Park.
You're listening to KPRZ, 1210 AM.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel, Sharon Cashard, and I'm talking with Zach Kroger from Central Washington University. Zach, it is such a delight to talk to you each week. This will be our last segment talking because we have some other phone calls we're going to take.
Okay.
But I want you to come on our show again in a few weeks, my friend. Because
all right. Would it be okay if I had just one last little comment?
I'm just saying we'll still have another whole segment, but I'm telling you now that it's the last one because sometimes we're in the middle of things when we end, and I won't have time for my nice cordial goodbye, so I kind of gave it to you ahead of time.
Okay, cool.
Go ahead, make your comment.
Okay, I was going to say, with paranormal, all this stuff, even if it is, if everything I'm saying is wrong and what you experienced was actually real, I still have to ask, why is it that the paranormal stuff only exists outside of the skeptics and the controlled experiments? Why does it only ever happen when people are in large groups or really believe it? And, you know, little slumber parties and stuff. Why does it never happen when it's controlled circumstances?
Yeah, well, of course, you're asking a very good question. And I would respond by saying that there are different types of controlled experiences and different types of situations that skeptics go to. For example, I was the skeptic in this experience. I had been raised as an atheist. I was not yet even believing in God, let alone the Bible or Jesus. I was there as a skeptic. Now, was I there as a scientist with notes and data? No. I was there even more skeptical and less open with that. I already knew this was stupid. Like I said before, I wasn't even open. It was just a bunch of idiots. They were my friends, but they were morons. And I was watching so that I could have a story to tell and tell people about these nincompoops. And so from my point of view, I was testing it. And then now, what about somebody more credentialed than me? A friend of mine named Roger Cousins, and you might have heard this story. It might have come up at the debate that I did, but I did four debates this month, so who remembers?
Yeah,
talk about memory. There's an idea.
Yeah.
I know that I tell certain things at debates. What did I say at which debate? There's an example of something that I wouldn't remember as well as Sharon says I remember. But I do know that I share this story, and you might have heard it. A friend of mine called me on the phone to say that there was a cyst on his wife's uterus. They found it on an X-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have the kind of evidence people always ask for: charts, graphs, pictures, credentials, verified professionals. She was going to go in to have it checked again. They didn't know if it was cancerous or not, but he was very concerned. He called everybody he knew in the country and asked them to pray. When they went back and took a second photograph, the cyst simply wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
This doctor was an atheist. The doctor turned to my friend Roger and said, "In my professional opinion, I would have to call this a miracle." Now, whether he meant that he believed in God or not, I don't think he knows what he meant by that. He did mean there was no scientific explanation. And in this case, we had picture one, picture two. The doctor says, "I don't know what happened." My friend says, "Well, I'll tell you what happened. I got on the phone and I prayed for people." So now, again, that was not an experiment that set out with a certain agenda, but it was certainly a controlled environment in the sense that here's this woman who believes in God being X-rayed by a doctor who doesn't believe in God. So I would say that there are situations where people who are skeptical are observing these things, and that's why they're not skeptical anymore. The purpose of an open mind, and I think you would probably agree with this, the purpose of an open mind is to examine the data and eventually come to a conclusion.
Oh, yeah.
And then eventually close our mind. Let me ask you a question,
okay,
Zach, regarding the whole plethora of disciplines associated with Christianity. What would God need to do? What would, and you understand I'm not asking this to try to convert you. In fact, if you got converted too soon, you'd be a less interesting guest.
Well, so, no,
how's that? More concerned about my radio show than your soul. How's that?
Yeah.
No, I'm, of course, I'm concerned about your soul, but I'm a big believer that your soul is between you and God. So I'm asking this as just a very sincere question and not an attempt to provoke you any direction at all, honestly. What would it take? What would God need to do to convince you that he's real?
That is a great question. I get that fairly often. And actually, one of the girls that is in Matt Lundquist's group, the Camps Ambassadors, we had had lunch one time and we were talking about this. And it was really hard for me to come up with an answer just because so many things I could think, well, maybe it's, you know, a jar of peanut butter that's magically doing something. Maybe that's it. And so she was like, well, no, you need to pray to the God of the Bible and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, well, I'll figure something out that's really outrageous that I think there's no other possible explanation. So what I came up with, this is about a month ago, it was about a month ago you were in Washington, were you?
Just about, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so it was probably about 3.5 weeks ago then that this happened. And I said, okay, what I will do is I will be, without doubt, I set this up, and it's still set up right now in my room. I have two shoes in my closet in a box, and I will check every Tuesday, and I'll pray. And I've been doing it. Now, if every Tuesday, I'll go and look, and if $2.22 appear in my left shoe, I'll be blown away, and I'll think, okay, it must be God. And I make sure, you know, I lock my door and I leave, and I'm on the second floor, and nobody's coming in my window. So far, nothing's been there. I check every Tuesday, and so far, nothing yet.
But. Okay, and let me ask you a question. Being that you just announced this over the radio, if you were to find the $2.20...
22.
Thank you, Sharon.
Had to be an abstract.
That's really right. $2.20 won't cut it. If you were to find the $2.22, is it possible that you would start thinking, well, boy, I said this over the radio, one of my friends could be pulling my leg or some Christian...
I'd probably be skeptical that somebody was actually doing it, just because I can lock my door,
right,
and whatnot. I would probably be more willing to be like, I would, if I actually, for like right now, I opened up my closet. Actually, I'll go look right now.
Now,
nothing.
You're looking right now. It's not there.
But if there was, I would be shocked. I would be so, I would be shooken up, and I would really have to go through and re-examine everything I thought about the world.
That's his place.
Well, now, let me give you two answers to this. First of all, there was a fellow in the Bible that made a prayer just like that. His name was Gideon, and he put out this cleaning fleece, and he just said, God, if it's wet tomorrow but the dry is ground, then I'll know you're calling me to... He was actually testing a call that had come from God, and he was doubting whether it was really coming from God. And then the next day he reversed it, because it did happen that way, and he said, okay, I want to reverse it the next day, and I want the fleece to... The first one was fleece wet, dry ground, next time fleece dry, wet ground, and happened that way both days. So the Bible gives examples of God sometimes doing that. At the same time, the Bible doesn't encourage that kind of prayer. Would you be just as willing to say, I'll tell you what, God, you know me. Would you be willing to do something that would convince me? But since you're not a genie in the bottle that exists at my beck and call, but you're a free agent, would you be willing to... you know me. You know it would convince me, and I'm open to whatever you might be willing to try. What do you think?
Well, that's another great question. Actually, when I was kind of going through my phase of on the road to atheism from theism over the past couple of years, my girlfriend, who's a Christian, she would say similar things like, okay, you know, God knows you more than anybody. He knows you better than you. And I was like, I guess that's true. If God exists, that would be true. Or the Christian God, at least.
Okay.
And so I was like, well, okay, I'll try. And so I would get so frustrated over the summers because I'd be praying all the time, like, God, please, just something. And actually, it was this last summer, and it was just on my way home from work. I drive home every day from work, and
I'll tell you what. Hold on. I'm going to give you just one more minute at the top of our next break so that you can finish your point. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
APRZ. APRZ. San Diego.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
In Sweetwater, a college student teaches swimming at the Y.
In Woodsboro, an iron worker builds a home with Habitat for Humanity.
In Detroit, a dental hygienist helps clean up a state park.
In Seattle, a commercial fisherman joins the Naval Reserve.
People across America are giving back to their community and their country. The Naval Reserve is proud to include these individuals among our ranks. Together, we will build a better world. Call 1-800-USA-USNR or go to NavalReserve.com. Naval Reserve, stay strong.
In Lancaster, a little league coach gets his team to the big game.
In Ventura, a volunteer firefighter orders herself out of bed at 4 a.m.
In Peoria, a CPA joins the PTA.
In Nashville, an aspiring songwriter joins the Naval Reserve.
People across America are giving back to their community and their country. The Naval Reserve is proud to include these individuals among our ranks. Together, we will build a better world. Call 1-800-USA-USNR or go to NavalReserve.com. Naval Reserve, stay strong.
This is KPRZ.
KPRZ.
1210 AM, a service of Salem Communications Corporation.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with Zach Kroger. Okay, Zach, we've got somebody that's been waiting on our line for an awfully long time, but so we need to wrap this up. Go ahead and finish the point you were making.
Okay.
I had asked, would you be willing to go to God and just say in general, God, do something that would convince me. You know my mind. You know what would convince me.
As I would be praying, mostly kind of like you said, I'd talk out loud more than just like, you know, praying silent and stuff. And be a lot of times when I was going to go to sleep or on my way home from work. But I'd be like, God, you know, I rationalize things away pretty well. It's going to have to be something that I can't just rationalize away with confirmation bias or pattern seeking, stuff of that sort. And so I would ask, just please show me something. And for 4 summers, 4 years, nothing. And so I eventually came to the conclusion, well, I guess that's pretty good. Obviously, maybe I'm just not doing something right, and my girlfriend's like, well, you have to do this, and well, I tried that, got to do this, tried that. Just never seemed to work, so.
Okay, my friend, I entirely understand your frustration with that, and I have not the slightest doubt that you're seeking God sincerely. Let me just leave you with this encouragement. I encourage you to do it, and I think that even if you're not continuing to pray to him like that, I think when you have these skeptics dialogues and get into these conversations, even without the prayer, it seems like in your own way you may be looking for God. Maybe not, but I know that for myself, I was for years looking for God without knowing it. I was calling it a search for peace, truth, love. I know you seek these things. And it's amazing. Everybody has their time. The day I met God was somehow the day I was meant to meet God. Had I met him a year earlier, it would not have been as significant. That's a very personal thing. I don't know why God hasn't shown himself to you yet. I really believe he will someday. But whether he does or not, Zach, it's just always a tremendous pleasure talking to you. Let's talk again in a couple of weeks on our show.
Sounds great, Bob.
Zach, my friend, take care and have a wonderful holiday.
You too. I'll talk to you
later.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, 1-800-556-1210. We have Jimmy from El Cajon. Jimmy, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Howdy. Thank you very much, Bob.
I'm awfully sorry you had to wait so long.
Oh, that's okay. I wanted to say I saw your debate this past week with Bob Price.
Yeah.
And I thought you both did excellent jobs arguing your cases.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, now for your listeners who may not know, Bob Price professes to be a Christian of a sort, but he's not convinced that Jesus really existed historically and so forth. And he argues that various pagan parallels to Jesus, suggest that the gospel accounts may be more mythical than anything else.
That's right.
I was wondering, now he's published a book called The Incredible Shrinking Son of Man, and there's similar books like that.
Yes.
I'm wondering, are there any evangelical resources, either online or in book form or what have you, that interact with this style of argument?
There certainly are. And let me, Ronald Nash, The Gospel and the Greeks, I believe it's called. But if you just did a website Google search on Ronald Nash, it would come up. It's an excellent book. Ronald Nash is a professor of comparative religion. And, Jimmy, let me say a few other things about this. First of all, in the fields of scholarship, people that really study the ancient world and know mythology and in the fields of classical historians, I mean historians like Michael Grant, historians like Will Durant, people who were not even Christians, people like A.N. Sherwin White, they would tell you that this idea that Christianity was borrowed from mythology is nonsense. And I have a great respect for my friend Bob Price, so when I say nonsense, I don't mean that with disrespect to him. But they will tell you that scholars aren't taking that seriously anymore. What has happened, though, is in the last, 5 years on atheist websites, this idea that was abandoned by scholars years ago is popping up again. And the idea had been made popular at the return of the century by a guy named Bultmann. But most of these Greek myths that they claim Christianity borrowed from, yes, the myth itself predates Christianity, but the form of the myth, the mystery cult worship that Bob Price was talking about, where they were talking about virgin birth and resurrection and they had communion meals, that stuff dates the 2nd and 3rd century and comes after Christianity. So it's very questionable who followed from whom. But if you want to do a great study on this, Ronald Nash, The Gospel and the Greeks.
Yeah, Nash's book is one that I've got. It's a few years old, though. I'm wondering, is there more recent stuff interacting more specifically?
Yeah, it's a guy on the web named A.P. Holding who has some interesting stuff. If you and what's his site called? Tektronix. But anyway, just Google that, A.P. Holding. Or all you'd have to do is Google, is Jesus stolen from Buddha or is Jesus stolen from Dionysus? And any of A.P.'s articles will come up. He does a really good in-depth job with that. You might find that helpful as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for calling, my friend.
Okay.
Peggy, you're on the Bob Siegel Show. Peggy, you're on the Bob Siegel Show.
Okay. Yes, I was very interested in what you were saying. I had a lot of different things I wanted to say, and I know you're almost out of time. But I did have an experience with table tipping some 34 years ago.
Oh.
And that was really interesting, and it was not a hoax at all. The couple that my older sister knew encouraged us to do it. They said they did it all the time. And so we did, and there were four legs on the table, And we started off with three people, and her husband came in, and he said, no, you know it's not going to work. You've got to have four people. And whatever reason, I'm not quite sure about that. But at any rate, my sister was sitting directly across from me, and we were both very skeptical. And the couple said they really didn't know if it would work or not. Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't. But at any rate, the table lifted. Well, we all had our hands above the table. Nobody was touching the table. And it started lifting up where my sister had her hands above it. And I remember looking across at her and seeing her eyes get as big as saucers.
Wow.
And she still didn't have her hands touching it.
Now, were you already a believer in God at that time, Peggy?
Well, I thought I was.
Are you now presently? Or?
Oh, yes. I'm a born-again Christian
right
now, a couple of years after that.
Yeah.
At that time, I thought I was, but, you know, I really hadn't accepted the Lord. For
sure. Well, that's a common experience with many.
But anyway, it lifted up so high that after a while, I could only see the top of her head.
Sure, and somebody might say, well, that could have been cosmic energy, but that's
no.
just a term somebody uses when it's a miracle.
No, I looked at everybody's hands. Everybody's hands were above the table.
Right.
And
of course, that might have even been from the power of Satan. Peggy, why don't you call us again next week and we'll talk some more because we are out of time.
Okay.
Call us again next week. We would love to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling in. You are always welcome, everybody. Your questions are welcome, too.
The Bob Siegel.